Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and, of course, online, tsn1050.ca. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Noodles remains in San Jose, California. You're calling a game tomorrow night, Ottawa and San Jose. The Leafs will be in L.A. That's interesting. The two Ontario teams happen to be in Cali at the same time. And yep. Crisscrossing, I'm sure they're doing the whole trip. And, yeah, we'll see what the Leafs have in store tomorrow night. Kyle Clifford is on the trip, and he's been recalled by the team. I don't think he's going to get into the lineup, but tomorrow would be the game to play him, wouldn't it? I mean, he's got the history with the Kings. If you're going to try to mix him into the lineup and you want to give him a taste, it's not like he's not familiar with the Leafs. He was here a couple of years ago.
I'll give you one negative element to it, Hayes. He's wearing number 43.
Right. Nazem Kadri's number. You got an issue with that? You don't like it?
Are you kidding me? No. Unless you're, like, keeping number, like, although I will say, like, really popular players, the trainers need to do a better job of, like, not giving that number out.
Well, what was Tux's number?
16.
16.
So that's been given away.
Yeah,
well, first of all, Tux is not a Hall of Famer, very popular player in Toronto, but I think there might have been a conversation, I don't know, between Mitch and Tux. I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to ask your new best friend. Like, I don't know these things.
Oh, you're incapable of asking him that? Why not? You ask him.
I mean, that's pretty cool, though. If Mitch called Tux and was like, listen, you know, I grew up watching you. You're one of my favorite players. I'd be honored to wear your number type of thing. Because, you know, I would assume that's might how it would go down, correct?
Well, I think Marner wore 16, though, all the way up, did he not? Like, that was his number.
I just think some of these kids these days, they go to organizations and they have no clue. Like, they have no clue about, like, Jeremy Roenick and, like, the numbers they wore and the stuff like that. Like, they just, they don't know. Well, and the trainer should know, though. The trainer should pull the kid aside and say, look, this guy used to wear that number. Do you really want to wear that?
I know for a fact you're right. There are young players that know the history of organizations, they're students of the game. Mark Scheifele comes to mind. Like, apparently he's like a hockey nerd, knows everything, knows the history of the game, which is really cool. There's other players that are like, I don't really know. That's not an era. That's not in my era. I don't really care, which I respect as well, because we all played with guys like that in junior or in the NHL. But I know of one story, which I thought was kind of funny, which one of my friends told me he was coaching. And there was a guy running the power play who was a legend and, like, kind of like, I think Hall of Famer or not. I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to tell the team, but the guys on the power play were like, why, you know, who is this pigeon, like, trying to tell us what to do? We'll sort this out. And the coach was like, you know, that guy scored 500 goals in the league. And they were like, what? They had no idea that this coach, assistant coach, had that many goals in the league. And they were like, it was almost like they were thumbing their nose at him and going like, why is this guy running the power play? And they're like, now I realize why.
Right.
And it was because those young players had no idea that this coach had played that long and had that much success. And after that knowledge was shared with them, they were like, okay, now I get it type of thing.
I guess, you know, it depends on how much of a separation we're talking. If that player is 65 years old, then I'm not shocked that a 20-year-old is like, sorry, man, I wasn't watching you play 40 years ago. I wasn't alive. But, you know, if it's a crossover, like Marner would know that Tucker wore that number. But I think, again, a lot of it is that's what you wore all the way up and that's what you're going to wear, right? Like Spezza wore 19 all the way up as a kid. He wears it now in the league. 19's a pretty famous number. Some great players throughout the NHL have worn 19. And it's like, that's just what you're going to wear, you know? And I don't know. I mean, the idea of knowing the history. Remember when Ron Wilson did that back in the day? You guys may not remember this. When he was posed the question about who was going to be the captain, this was in between Sundin leaving and Phaneuf showing up and being anointed the captain. Uh-huh. Wilson, I remember saying, would not anoint a captain until that player could look at, I think he said, the 67 Leaf team that won the cup and name players off the team.
That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And obviously, like, with all the respect to Dion Phaneuf, I'm pretty sure he didn't walk in and say, George Armstrong, Dave Keon, you know, Tim Horton.
Yeah,
he didn't know. There's no way he did. So clearly they adjusted the rules, and maybe it was just Wilson being a hero. Maybe I'm misinterpreting exactly what the story was at the time, but he wanted someone that understood the history of the Leafs, and it was important. And if you want to be the captain, you've got to get it. And it seemed unreasonable at the time. And I guess that's in line with what we're talking about here. Like,
sure it is.
You think they would know? And I think in a way we're showing our age. Like, how can you not know that this guy wore that number or this guy did that? But, you know, Kyle Clifford might look at it and say, I think Clifford's older than Kadri. It's like, I don't care that Kadri wore 43.
No kidding. Give me
like,
the
I've
number.
I've got a cup ring and I've been in the league. I'm wearing it.
Exactly. So. Like, and as much as, you know, we discuss Kadri and his importance and how great of a player he is, like Clifford's a grizzled vet. He can grab whatever number he wants. I've always, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, I feel like there's so many numbers, they're running out of numbers. Do you ever think we'll see a three-digit number? Will anybody, could you imagine a generational player shows up? Connor McDavid goes, you know what, I'm drafted first overall, Edmonton Oilers. I want to be number 106. Like, what, could you say no?
Yeah, you'd have to say
why?
No. You'd have to say who. You,
give me the logic behind it. It seems asinine, but there is going to be. How many times have we said, "Well, in the future, there's going to be this and this"? Like, why isn't there a three-digit number?
Well,
for a player,
I would think for the selling of the jerseys to keep it consistent. The history of the league, it's never happened.
I know.
I think what's more likely to happen, like in Montreal, they have retired a lot of numbers.
So many, I believe,
more than anyone else. What's more likely to happen is they basically unretire the number. Like, it might get to a point where, you know, in 200 years.
How do you think that's going to go over there? God, well, do you think that's now we're going to pull, you know,
never
somebody's going to wear
the number.
Maurice Richard's number.
But if you run out of numbers, like, if that happens, which seems like in, you know, crazy talk now, but if the league is still around 200, 300, 400 years and they've had a lot of great players and a lot of great numbers that have been retired, at some point you might run into that issue. You know, what if rosters have been expanded to 35 players and you're down to 33 new numbers? Then, hey, back in, 1912, we retired a number and it's the year 2230. They're like, go ahead and take that one down. Like, I don't remember that guy. No one was alive when he played.
Right.
Like, that would be what I see happening as opposed to going to 101, 107.
I'm telling you that you just open up. Think of the merchandising. Like, they're the first player that goes, I want to be number 100.
Like, yeah, 100, that's a bold number. It should be a guy
ballsy.
Like McDavid. It should be. It can't be some plug on the fourth line who plays seven games in the league.
Kyle Clifford gets called up. I want to be number 100 for the Leafs.
100, the first guy ever to do it.
I know it's ridiculous, but I think it's coming. I think instead of unretiring numbers or having a crossover or whatever, I think there might be a three-digit number just for
maybe you're right.
You know, somebody thinks outside the box. Would somebody say no? Would the Leafs?
Well,
Austin
I'm guessing
Matthews,
it's happened. Like, you're telling me in the last 100 years, no one has walked in and said, "Can I have three digits?" Like, someone's asked that. Someone has absolutely asked for that number, whatever it was, 100, 105, 110.
In any sport.
In any sport, and they clearly were shut down. Like, it's probably in the rule book that it's not allowed.
It might be.
There's probably a reference point where a trainer can be like, don't even ask me. I don't have the power to give it to you anyway.
Right.
I don't know. Howard Beck coming up, NBA writer, in about 15 minutes. Let's fire up some confirm or deny.
I can neither confirm or deny that that this is in fact a segment.
Austin trades Andrew Raycroft to Toronto in exchange for the rights to Tuukka Rask.
It's been my honor and a privilege to serve as the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs Hockey Club.
It's time for confirm or deny.
Do you regret giving all those gentlemen the no trades or no movement clauses?
I can neither confirm or deny that.
I can't confirm or deny.
All right, confirm or deny, brought to you by our friends at Don Valley North Lexus. Right now, lease a 2022 RX350 premium package from just $268 biweekly for 40 months. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com for all of the details. All right, confirm or deny. We know the way this works. A statement is made. We go around the table and we confirm that it will happen or we deny.
My favorite segment.
I love
Hit
it.
Me with the Ferg.
Okay, here we go. Confirm or deny, one of Tom Brady and the Bucks or Bill Belichick and the Pats will be back in the Super Bowl this season.
It's a question that almost warrants an in-between, but you got to pick one or the other, and it's I'm going to go confirm.
Confirm. Yeah, you're getting two teams that are going to be in the dance, right? You're getting two that are going to be in the dance, for sure.
I'm telling you, Bill Belichick, it's like Tom Brady won the Super Bowl with Tampa last year, but I think he's getting people's attention up there in New England this year. It's like, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
With that guy's track record, his pedigree, the way he operates, I guarantee you people are like, they got Buffalo twice coming up. I guarantee you Buffalo's thinking, oh, boy.
They're terrified of Buffalo's games.
That New England team has haunted Buffalo for years.
But this
should be the time that Buffalo dummy trains them. Not going to happen.
But they exercised those demons last year. You know, I thought Buffalo was on a rocket ship to, you know, really that next level. You know, I mean, at the starting of this NFL season, if you had told me, I mean, Hayes, correct me if I'm wrong. You're like, yeah, Buffalo's they're the best team in that division. Like,
yep.
From what we knew from last season, how poorly it went for New England, you know, Belichick kind of was retooling all of that. You're like, Josh Allen can't miss Rockstar. You know, Buffalo has a solid team. Like, they're going to run away with the division. Now, all of a sudden, I'm sensing, you know, some apprehension. Like, are they in trouble? Are they cusp? Or, like, where are you at with them?
Yeah.
You know,
I think we finish this off. I think the Bills, they've hit a big stumbling block here. Like, Josh Allen, was it Marcellus that was on yesterday, I believe? He said, Allen, year over year has progressed significantly. This year, the progression has been stunted, and that should be expected.
Right.
You're not going to just get better every single year. It can't happen in terms of stats and production.
Right.
So he's not playing as well statistically as he was a year ago. As a result, Stephon Diggs is not having the same year. And there's a trickle effect here where it's stunting the production of the Bills. And look at their run defense. We saw it. Indianapolis went in there and steamrolled them. Like, that is concerning. Their defense was so good last year. Their offense obviously clicked. I still think they're a playoff team. I still think they can win the division. But they're not as great as I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be better than this, the Bills. And again, as I said yesterday, there's still a lot of runway. Maybe they get there. As for the confirm or deny, I'm actually going to deny it because the statistics have taken the field. You know, it's just I question whether or not Mac Jones, a rookie, can win enough games in the playoffs to get to a Super Bowl. And Brady, the Bucks, they're still really good. We saw it last night. They're going to be in the dance. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with. But I just don't know if they do it back-to-back.
And it could be a year where just like weird, I'm not going to say weird, but kind of unknown teams make the Super Bowl, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who knows how good the Cardinals really are?
Exactly.
Who knows?
It could be the Cardinals playing Tennessee in the Super Bowl. You know,
it could be one of those years, man.
Yeah, it could be for sure.
I'm confirming it because I believe in Belichick. And I'd like to see him bounce back and give Brady a little dose of his medicine, what he got last year.
It'd be incredible if they both made it.
Really cool.
That would be unbelievable if it was Brady versus Belichick in the Super Bowl. Confirm and deny, the Leafs are on the West Coast, as we know. The Maple Leafs will get at least 4 points in California.
Out of six?
Three games, right? Yep, they got 3 games in Cali.
I'm going to confirm it, too,
because I remember, and Hazy, you razzed me.
Mm-hmm.
They had all three and then a St. Louis on the way back, and I predicted 0 points. And you were like, come on, they're getting 1 point. And they came home with zero.
Yeah, that was
so
that was a number of years ago.
That was when things were starting to get really ugly. So to commemorate that trip, I'm going to say at least they're getting 4 this time.
I could see it. I mean, these teams are good. Anaheim's a sleeper. Like, L.A., I never know what you're going to get. Like, they went on that heater 7 in a row. Like, they are better than what we gave them credit for. Like, they are. They've got a great coach. I love Todd McClellan. You know, quickest turn back the clock. You know, no Drew Doughty, but that team with the addition of Deno. I really like this Kempe kid. Like, he's a good skater.
Player.
And they had signed him to a 3-year extension at $2 million a year. I remember thinking, like, he's got all the tools. If he ever puts it together, he scored an overtime against Montreal the other day. Really nice goal. And you know, Kopitar. Like, I think LA's a sneaky team. I think Anaheim's a sneaky team. And this San Jose team, you know, I'm looking at Brent Burns. Like, Burns has got some points. He's got 12 points. Like, they've got some guys like Timo Meier. Like, it just, it depends on what you're going to get. Their A game or, you know, the game where you're like, all right, the Leafs are a better team type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's concerns me. And time change, I'm telling you right now, it does factor in. I was telling you at the start of the show, like, I'm yawning last night at 9 o'clock. That's the middle of the game. You know,
right.
Now I'm 50 and not in shape like these guys, but it does factor
it
slightly.
It is, man.
Yeah, that's right. Why I'm actually going to deny it, which I, you know, I could see 1-1-1. I could see even 1-2. Let's not, you know, you mentioned that trip, the 3 in Cali, then 1 in St. Louis. That was years ago. 2 years ago before COVID, remember, they went out there and got skunked. And that's when it was really panic time. That was Keith. Keith was there, and it was like, remember, Keith got behind the bench, and they took off, and then they started to sputter. Mm-hmm. And when COVID hit, they were like 2 or 3 points into the playoffs. They were not a lock. And
right.
They had just gone through Cali, and they were brutal in Cali. So, you know, maybe it's just, what have you done for me lately in California? But I'm a put up or shut up mode here with the Leafs in Cali. I'll believe it when I see it.
All right.
So I'm going to deny. Confirm or deny, Tiger Woods will make the cut in at least one major in 2022.
Are you kidding me? He could win the Masters. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever
heard. We don't
heard
even know if he's playing. Yeah, two days ago, you're like, this guy's not coming back. Now he's going to win the Masters.
Dude, you can't bring up comments from a couple days ago when it's a completely different question in a completely different narrative. I think this is crazy. He could win the Masters. And I'm not going off a three-second video of him hitting
yes,
an 8-iron.
You're not. Clearly going off that video because – I think 2 days ago is reasonable to recite.
So is the basis of the question, is the basis of a question like whether he'll actually play?
Well,
if he's pegging it up in four majors, of course he's making the cut.
But obviously that's a part of the conversation. Maybe he doesn't play in any of them. Maybe it's a trick question. You got to consider that.
Dude, you know there's a method behind the madness of that video. That video says Augusta National, clean out my stall. And put my favorite snacks in it.
Yes.
Because I'm coming to town, and you never know what can happen.
That gold jacket will be on.
I'm confirming Elgin. Because if I don't, Jay Mack will scissor kick his TV. Because you know he's all about Tiger coming back and dominating.
Yes. Green jacket, I should say. I'm thinking of Happy Gilmore and Shooter
having
the gold jacket. I'll confirm it, too. I've been on the Tiger train. I told you, man. A little birdie told me 2 months ago that he was out hitting. He's been hitting shots for a while. That was not the first time he's been on the range. Let's clarify that. It wasn't the first time, and he took a video. This guy, I'll bet you he's hit every club in his bag. He's feeling it. He's moving towards that direction. He's going to be in majors, and he's going to make the cut. Confirm or deny, Leon Draisaitl will score 60 goals this season.
60?
60.
I'll confirm that. What the hell's going to stop him? It's not like he's just going to fall off the face of the earth and slow down. He, ever since he got on that heater, has not stopped. And he produces every night, and I don't see him stopping whatsoever. I'll confirm it. How can you bet against
that? He's got 18 goals in 17 games.
Right exactly. How do you bet against it? He's so good.
Their power play is ridiculous. That's the – like, and he's the trigger guy right off the draw. They have that spin-out move where he just peels off and they hit him through the seam, and he's got a really good one-timer. He's got a blade on it. Like, I don't know if he's got that – you could probably break it down. Like, Draisaitl's got that Solani kind of really long and thick blade, and it's almost like a paddle. And he sweeps the puck. Like,
yeah,
he's got a. I could see him doing it with a lot of power play goals, but that 60's a rich number, guys. Like, there's gonna be some bumps in the road for everyone this season where you go 5 or 6 without a goal, and that I'm playing the field on time.
History. Very tough to do, man.
As much as I'd like to see him, and I think he's capable, like, it's close, man. I would say I'd like to see him get, like,
he's
what
getting
you guys
50
doing?
If he's 50? Healthy.
Yeah.
If he's getting healthy, if he's healthy, he's already done 50. He did 50 a few years ago.
Yeah,
50 if he's healthy.
Big number though. Like,
I'm confirming it too. I think McDavid has 152 points. Draisaitl has 63 goals. Like, that's what it feels like to me, the way they're cooking. And, yes, there will be bumps in the road. But what we realized last year and what I think will continue this year, if let's say they go and they hit the wall for three or four games, they'll come out of it like gangbusters, and they'll be like, all right, you got us for three. And Detroit will be in town on a back-to-back, and they'll each have 6 points. Yeah, like, that's what happens with these guys.
You're right. Like, top players in this league do produce, and it's just a matter of time.
These two are different.
All right, you guys talked me into it, but I would lean towards the
stick to your guns. Stick to your guns.
Right. I'm going to deny it and just say he's going to be 50-plus type of thing.
Okay, confirm and deny. The Bryson versus Koepka event this week will live up to the hype.
No way, man. I don't even know why, but I'm not even that jacked up to watch it. And it'll be on some goofy channel for Canadians, won't it, Hayes? It'll be
on CNBC.
Yeah,
it's on like the Weather Channel or something, yeah. It's on a channel no one's ever heard of before.
I don't know. And it's like the timing of this was so poor because they were supposed to do this type of thing after the PGA when they were bitching and complaining at each other. That would have been the ideal time for this match. Although in probably real life they didn't hate each other, but that was the timing of it if you were some kind of TV exec that wanted to put these guys on. So... deny.
Yeah, I'm gonna deny it as well because
there's no hatred anymore. They played the Ryder Cup together. They're buddies.
Yeah, I don't know if they're buddies, but I think the chirping will feel, you know, staged. It'll feel manipulated. It'll feel as if they're putting it on. I think there will be some chirps. I do think it's always fun to see these guys play, you know, a track like the one they're gonna play down in Vegas because they both bomb the ball. And aren't they – Koepka's with Srixon in Cleveland. Is that who he signed with today? I can't remember. Yeah. I think that's what he signed with. I was going to say, are they both together? But I don't think they are because Bryson's Puma and Cobra. But, I'll deny it. It's not going to be crazy. It's not going to be a hate fest. It's not going to feel awkward, which would actually make for good TV. And I don't know if they've got the personalities. Like, I don't know if Koepka can be the brunt of the joke either. Can Koepka laugh? You know, or is he?
I don't know if
Koepka's
like a ham it up guy. Like, I don't know. Neither of them are.
Me neither. I don't know if Bryson. Like, how awkward could Bryson be?
If I can find it, I'll watch the golf just to watch golf because there's no golf, but that's it. But it won't live up to the hype.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll save maybe a confirm or deny for after dark. Got one more in the tank. We'll get to that a little bit later this hour. Confirm or deny was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus. Right now, lease a 2022 RX350 premium package from just $268 biweekly for 40 months. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com for all of the details. Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated coming up, NBA writer and analyst. His take on where the Raptors stand. They're 1-3 on the 6-game roadie. His take on the Siakam and Barnes ceiling, among many other things in the NBA. Catch up with Howard. And again, we'll get to some confirm or deny after dark later this hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. All right, confirm or deny after dark in about 20 minutes. The Raptors have been on the road, 1-3 on the road, and the three losses were somewhat predictable. Portland, Utah, Golden State. Utah and Golden State were going to get them. Portland, they had a shot. It was close late. And then all of a sudden it wasn't. They lost, I think, by 10. And they got their win in Sacramento. And that was basically the end of the Luke Walton era. And now they got Memphis and Indiana to wrap up the 6-game roadie. And there's a lot going on in the NBA, as there always is. Yesterday around this time, news broke. Isaiah Stewart got 2 games. Detroit Pistons got 2 games. LeBron James got 1 game for the altercation a few nights ago. I wouldn't say it was the Malice at the Palace 2.0, but a bit of a circus. And to chat about that, among some other things, we're joined now by Howard Beck, NBA writer with Sports Illustrated. You think justified ruling there from the NBA, Howard? LeBron getting 1 and Stewart getting 2 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was exactly what I expected and exactly what felt right given the actions of each of them. I don't, you know, it didn't seem like a particularly controversial decision by the NBA.
So, go ahead. Sorry, go.
Howard, how do you think Isaiah Stewart moves on from this? Because it just seems like everybody, social media, former players are saying you don't go after LeBron. Like, do you think he's able to recover from this and just, he's a young kid, he's 20 years old, I believe. Is he able to recover from this and just carry on with his career and get back to normal?
I mean, I don't really know much about Isaiah Stewart and his mental makeup, and how he might process something like this. But I mean, you know, look, he lost control And I understand it's the heat of the moment, and he's got blood running down his face, and he's angry and wants to exact a little vengeance in the moment. You're professionals in this league, and you're supposed to, at a certain point, you know, get a hold of yourself and take a deep breath and just do what you got to do. Leave the court, deal with the aftermath, and that's it. That he kept going after him and kept trying to break loose from people, and you know, it was a little frightening in the moment to watch it unfold. It was a little wild, and it's not the kind of thing we see too often in today's NBA. But I mean, it happened. You move on. I mean, I don't know if there's anything more to it than that, and unless you think that there's something particularly fragile about this particular player. It happened in the moment. It was explosive. It was a little wild, but I think he just moves on with his career. And I don't think LeBron has anything to do with it. It could have, you know, his actions were his actions. It doesn't matter who he was going after.
As for the Lakers, they're sitting at 9-9, and there's always attention directed towards them. There's always heat on them. And, you know, LeBron had been dealing with injuries, and now he's going to be suspended for a game. Anthony Davis. Now you bring in Russ. They were an old team. You know, Carmelo's there. Rondo's there. There was a lot of buzz around the age and ageism directed towards the Lakers. What have you seen, Howard, through 18 games that would suggest this will still work out for the Lakers and they'll be a team to be reckoned with come playoff time?
Only that they have LeBron. And if LeBron can stay healthy for the rest of the season, and that's certainly an if. He's had, you know, a number of injury issues the last few years with them. That they have LeBron and Anthony Davis means that they could always be a threat. But as we sit here on November 23rd, I don't consider them a viable championship contender. That can change, but I think we've seen a lot of frailties there early on, and I'm not one who normally would make, you know, harsh judgments 1 month into the season, but we're getting close to that magical 20-game mark when teams kind of feel like they have a good sense of who they are and when the rest of us feel like we have a good sense of who teams are, and they don't deviate that much from them. Like, usually if you're a bad team 20 games in, you're probably just a bad team. The Lakers have been up and down, and you can optimistically point to the fact that LeBron has been out and they've had other guys out, you know, if they get healthy, all that stuff. Yeah, okay, but Russell Westbrook has been, I think, pretty bad on the whole with them. Their sporting cast is old in a lot of spots. They don't have a lot of guys who can hang their hats on defense. They don't, you know, it just, the parts don't seem to fit that well. And, you know, the West is tough. It's a strange year in the West because you've got, you know, the Warriors are suddenly back looking dominant, and now Klay Thompson could be back soon. The, you know, Nuggets and Clippers are missing key guys. The, you know, the rest of the top of the West, you know, like the Suns are on a hot streak and the defending Western Conference champs. But there's enough good to potentially great teams at the top there that I don't think the Lakers can get by just on LeBron and AD alone. And they traded away a lot of depth and a lot of defense to get Russell Westbrook. And I think that was a mistake on their part.
With Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated, Golden State, they're, as you said, off to a great start leading the West. And the Raptors just rolled through there. And Andrew Wiggins had himself a night. And Wiggins has really settled in well. And I think it's a perfect spot for him. It's not a spotlight. It's Steph's team. When Klay comes back, it's Steph, Klay, and Draymond's team. He's just a scorer. He's putting up better numbers in terms of shooting percentages. He's playing less minutes.
He looks a little more mature, Hazy, doesn't he?
He does.
I don't know if it's the beard or what, but he looks like a man out there.
Yeah, and I think it's more about his surroundings, because in Minnesota it was him and Karl Anthony Towns, and it's like, if you don't win, it's your fault. In Golden State, that's not going to be the case. What is your read on his situation, Howard? What's clicked here for Andrew Wiggins?
I happened to be in San Francisco, was it a week ago? 2 weeks ago now, I think, for the Warriors against the Timberwolves, when Wiggins went off on his former team and dunked a couple times on Karl Anthony Towns, just had this phenomenal night. And a couple of things that struck me in the aftermath. One was that a lot of, you know, local reporters were asking, you know, Steph and Draymond and Steve Kerr, like, you know, hey, how do you get this kind of night from Wiggins more often? And I think it was Steph who actually said something to the effect of, you know, maybe we just show them film of this night occasionally. And it kind of subtly spoke to the idea that, you know, Wiggins has always been this frustrating player where he has all the athletic and you know, potential and skill and talent in the world, but you don't see necessarily the same intensity or passion every night. And, you know, the Warriors have had him long enough to know that now that that's kind of what you ride through. The other thing that struck me that night is that Wiggins in his post game just seemed so relaxed. He was smiling and he was laughing. And, you know, I got the sense after a while in Minnesota that maybe he was feeling a little uptight there. And that happens when you're a number one overall pick, the franchise that drafted you, that's where all the pressure comes. And if you move on from that franchise, that's, you know, if it hasn't worked out, you have a chance to kind of recontextualize your career. And I don't think it's fair, you know, the a guy has to live up to number one. He didn't make himself the number one pick. His talent obviously put him there. But, you know, living up to that billing and the responsibility that comes with that to carry a franchise, to be one of the top players in the league, is really tough, and not everyone's built for that. And maybe he's not. But what he is in Golden State is a guy who can play off of Steph Curry and soon Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and learn from guys like Andre Iguodala and all these just consummate professionals who have been there, done that at the highest level, and also not have to be the number one or even the number two or on some nights even the number three option. He can just kind of blend in, do what he does best, and maybe, you know, the way that he's built, maybe that's his best role. And play defense, opportunistic scorer, his three-point shot has been pretty good since he's been with the Warriors. And, yeah, I just think you get a chance to reinvent yourself with a lot less pressure in that situation.
With Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated, which is a segue into a conversation we had yesterday, talking about Pascal Siakam, where I compared the two players, not necessarily in terms of style, but in terms of what I think would make them most comfortable. And, you know, both max players, both when Wiggins was in Minnesota, he had to be the man. Siakam's got to be the man here in Toronto. And Pascal, against the best teams this year, coming off major surgery for sure, has struggled, you know, really struggled. Against Portland, really struggled. Against Utah, it was horrendous. And then bounces back against Sacramento, and then I thought he struggled to really be, you know, aggressive against Golden State. Do you see a similar conversation here? Does that, you know, kind of ring true to you, Howard, when you look at what Siakam represents and this idea that he's got to be the man, but is he capable of being a true number one, like a star here in Toronto that can drive them somewhere?
The major difference, obviously, is that Siakam was a lower pick, so he didn't come into the league with those expectations on him in the first place, and those expectations didn't really start to fall on his shoulders until Kawhi Leonard left, and then obviously everybody else who's left since, right? I mean, it's you know, almost a new team. And, you know, it's Pascal and Van Fleet and OG Anunoby, who's like the holdovers from the championship team, and Siakam looked like the guy out of that group initially that people thought maybe was the one to carry this forward, I think just because of his unique blend of size and skill. And you know, is he built for that? I mean, so far it hasn't seemed like that. You know, he's been really up and down. He has the skill set to do a lot of different things on the court. It is hard to carry the whole load every night or a major part of the load to be the number one option on a team every night. And, you know, I don't know if I want to compare him to Wiggins only because, like I say, he developed in a different way and from a different position where he came in, you know, as a complimentary player and then just kind of had a breakout. But then he had a serious injury. And, you know, right now I wouldn't want to judge him anyway just because I think he's just trying to kind of get his game and his rhythm back.
With Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated. So the gratuitous Scotty Barnes question, whenever we have anyone on that covers the NBA, we have to ask about Scotty Barnes.
How good do you think he is?
How great is Scotty Barnes going to be? Exactly. And he had such a great start, and he made such noise, and it's expected. He went fourth overall, clearly. This isn't some, you know, non-drafted rookie or something. But he's hitting a bit of a wall. He's not shooting a bunch of threes. Where do you stand on Scotty Barnes, and what have you seen out of him and the potential for what he could be?
I don't know if I'm going to tell you anything that you guys haven't already heard or seen yourselves, but, you know, obviously he seems to have all the potential in the world. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you blossom into a franchise star or a perennial All-NBA guy or anything else or an MVP. But, it's so enticing that the potential there. And, you know, he plays his butt off. He plays with passion. He plays with a certain joy. Like, you can just tell he loves the game. And I love the fact that he seems pretty selfless as well. And, you know, again, the size and skill. I mean, the enticing thing about the Raptors overall is that when you look across, you know, the forwards with Barnes and Ananobi and Siakam, assuming you keep those three together and that all reach their potential, I mean, the damage those three could potentially do with all that height and length and versatility is really exciting. And so, you know, I don't like to project too much forward from a 16-game sample of a guy's rookie season. But, you know, I mean, at a minimum, like, he's definitely in the rookie of the year discussion and looks like, you know, he's going to be a foundational player for the Raptors for a long time to come.
That's all we wanted to hear, Howard. Yeah. That's all we needed, man. That's all we're looking for up here in Toronto. It's always great catching up with you. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
There's Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated, senior NBA writer.
I was going to ask him at the end. I guess we just didn't have time. Like, is Kyrie Irving just not playing? Like, is this over? Or?
Yeah, like, he doesn't even pop up on Instagram Live or anything.
And what about Simmons? Like you would think in a league in all pro sports is starving for talent. And although the guy can't shoot the ball, it's like, is this guy going to get moved? Or what the hell's going on with that?
I don't know. You're right. It's just it's a game of chicken two different ways. Simmons and the Sixers, and then the Sixers and every other team in the league who's willing to make an offer that clearly Philly has determined is not good enough. But, you know, Philly's not – it's not like they're crushing it either. Philly's had injury problems. They've had COVID problems. They're 10-8. Like, they're not crushing anything right now. So maybe either find a way to get them back into the room and playing, or take the deal and bring something in and go. But yeah, it's that's a prop. Who plays first, Kyrie Irving or Ben Simmons? Because
that's a good. I mean, I don't know.
That Kyrie, ever
he's a
since
weirdo, man.
He paired really up is. With LeBron in Cleveland, like a 30 or some kind of doc on his whole deal going to Boston, and after that, it's like I'd watch that because this guy. As bizarre as it is, it's fascinating somehow.
Yeah, and I'll say this: he appears to be locked in, and he's not changing his mind. You know, so I don't think he's just going to wake up tomorrow and say, "Ah, okay, fine." You know, I'll go get vaccinated, and I'll be there playing in a week or two.
Well, at least he's stuck with his resolve.
Yeah, like
other
that's
guys
the thing.
That were like, "I'm going to try a workaround." You know, not a shot at Wiggins, but he did try the workaround and then realized I've got no workaround,
I'm gonna lose money. And
exactly. Like, you know what? Ultimately, you make a decision how it affects you, but where's your line? Well, Wiggins' line wasn't worth $15 million, so he's like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm a young guy. I've still got a lot of runway. Kyrie has made so much money, and, you know, he's a unique personality. Let's call it that. I think I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of his. I don't like the way he does business. I think he's, you know, not a team guy, all of that stuff. But you know what? That's his prerogative. But he's dug a trench. I think he'll ride it right out.
It feels like, if you've gone this far, you've missed 18, 20 games. You know, again, I don't think he's just going to – I think he's waiting us out to see when the country turns or the state of New York turns. And maybe that's going to happen soon. Maybe he knows. I have no idea. I'm not following it closely down there. But he's made a decision, and he's entitled to that decision. He's allowed to. He doesn't have – he knew what was on the table.
Right.
And he's saying, I'm not doing it. And then he knows I'm forfeiting the money and I'm not playing. The Nets have moved on without him. So we'll see. And if he returns, when he returns, for whatever reason, I don't know what that, you know, what levy's going to break for him to be able to do that. That'll be another story. You know, it'll be again about Kyrie. Here comes Kyrie. When's he playing? What does he look like? How does he fit into the mold? We have not heard the last of Kyrie Irving.
No.
I think it's safe to say on that front. We'll come back with a little confirm or deny after dark. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Ooh, I can neither confirm or deny that.
Yes, a little Fergie after dark. That's what it should be called. Forget confirm or deny after dark. Fergie after dark.
Time for one more
Horny.
Confirm or deny.
Yes. So we discussed this yesterday, the Kyle Lowry re-signing the one-day contract. But the one-day contract would mean it's over. He's not playing again. But maybe he is going to play again. Confirm or deny, one of Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan will play at least one more game as a Raptor.
Deny.
You don't see it happening.
No. I think DeMar signed a massive deal in Chicago, yeah. Did he not?
Yep. Yep. I don't think Kyle's coming back to play another game. He's older. He's got 3 years. He's locked in. DeMar, I could possibly see at the end of the road. Remember how long we discussed? Remember Vince Carter when Vince was playing until he was 57 years old?
Right.
And every year it was like at the trade deadline, do you go get Vince? I could see that with DeRozan. Like, I could see DeMar playing for a long time, even a guy off the bench, and somehow gets acquired, comes back when he's like 40
years old.
You
talked me into it. Okay, I'll confirm it.
I'm wishing it into existence because I'd love to see DeMar and or Kyle return, but Lowry won't. Lowry, when he hangs it up, he's playing 36 holes a day and he's done.
See, I look at it, as much as DeMar was a fan favorite, fantastic player, like the low maintenance athlete, everybody loved the guy, there was no issues, but you had to get rid of him to take the next step and do the dirty deed to get championship here. So for that reason alone, I don't necessarily see the sentimental value in bringing him back. It's like,
well, he may not
make
see
sure.
It.
Yeah, come back and
he may not see it. Yeah, he may be like, I'm not coming back. Like, but look at Vince. Like Vince went out. Vince pulled them aside. Like Vince was the one who was like, I'm leaving and I'm going to sewer this whole franchise and I'm out of here. DeRozan didn't know it was coming to them, so I was like, you're out. You're going to San Antonio.
Wasn't the Vince scenario, I was playing hockey, I think. Like, what wasn't his mom involved, or it was ugly?
Yeah,
or
there was a lot of different parts. It was ugly, man. It was an awful exit. They got nothing for him in return. That's what really became crushing about it. It's one thing for the guy to go. If you're going to go, you got to get something, and they got nothing. Like, I mean nothing in return. That was tangible. It was an awful trade. And you can't say that about the DeRozan trade. It was an exceptional trade. Arguably the greatest trade in the history of the Toronto sports
team. It actually was. I mean, it got them a championship.
Yeah, right. That's right. So, yeah, out of nostalgia, I'll confirm it. But I hope DeMar, you know, has success in Chicago, goes on runs. You know, Kyle got his ring, and Kyle, I think, is going to have a chance to pursue another one down in Miami. DeMar, you know, he was here, battled for a long time, goes to San Antonio. They were pretty awful. Like, that wasn't Tim Duncan's Spurs, man. When he went down there, it was
definitely not that right now.
No, for sure. And now Chicago looks like they might have something. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah, that Monday nighter last night, we talked a lot about it in the 4 p.m. hour. The Giants, Joe Judge firing the offensive coordinator today, Jason Garrett. And Freddie Kitchens is going to take over as the offensive
coordinator. Oh, bad call.
Freddie Kitchens paired up with Daniel Jones.
I honestly, this is not going to be an improvement. I saw the perfect – this is where I'm going to reference The Simpsons, and, oh, you're going to – obviously, you've never seen it because you've never seen a Simpsons episode. But there's a GIF that gets used or a meme that gets used where Barney Gumble, who's just a piss tank, and he's always at Moe's, and Moe throws him out, and then before Moe even gets back into the bar, Barney's back in the bar stool, and yeah. Someone posted that Moe was Joe Judge throwing out Barney Gumble, the original was Jason Garrett, and then the guy back in the bar stool before Moe turns around is Freddie Kitchens, basically saying it's just the same guy. And nothing's going to change. Like, it's just bad call after
we've
bad
talked call. About it. We've talked about it, like, for ever since it happened. Like, how long can you keep talking yourself into Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes, being a guy that can take you to the next step? Because to get to the next step, and you saw it with Peyton Manning, how bad he was his first year and a half or whatever it was, but he's the one that took the steps to take the organization to a different level. And Daniel Jones is just not going to do that.
No.
He's not doing it.
He's not. There are quarterbacks where you look at him and you say, it's just not – unless you create a miracle, right? Like, it happened with Dilfer in Baltimore. It happened with, Johnson in Tampa. You know, there's been a couple of examples where you've had all-time great defenses, arguably the greatest of all time, great offensive lines, great run games, great special teams, great coaches, mediocre quarterback. It works. But that's like, honestly, two or three times every 20, 30 years. Really, you need a stud. You need a stud.
Yeah.
And these guys are not studs. And that's the reality of 16, 18 teams in the NFL where they look at their quarterback and they're like, we just don't have it. This guy's not, it's not going to win for us. So we'll leave it there. All right, Noodles, get after it tonight in San Jose. And tomorrow, too, I guess, you're calling the game, so you won't be on the show tomorrow. You'll be back on Thursday.
Thursday, I will be calling it from Newport Beach, California.
You'll be down in L.A. area.
I will
be in
the L.A. area, and I will
be making
sure.
You got to go on the beach and get a setup.
Yeah, try to set up with – give us some sort of view on Thursday.
You think I should? Like, I'll
do
try.
Do your best.
Go out in the patio. We love it.
Okay. We'll see what happens on Thursday.
Let's do it.
But we are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. Oh, you and I, we're back tomorrow at
– Don't ever ask for three numbers on your jersey. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.